Welcome, everyone. This is Caitlin Castell and Daniel DiMario with our call on the overview of 2014. It is an amazing year coming up, so we're very excited to share with you some of the things that will be happening during this year. But before we jump in, just a couple of quick announcements that we're still taking registrations for the Scotland event. Details are on the website. That's happening April. Daniel, what are the dates? April
13th through the 21st, and we still have room for, I think, 7 more people.
Okay. So if you're interested in doing that, you better jump on board quick. And then also just wanted to let everybody know, well, we are doing a synodic cycles class, a 5-day, 4-night class that will be at Baywood, New Mexico, at a standing stone circle in the hot springs, a really amazing place. And with 2 new cycles starting, with Venus cycle starting in January and a Mars cycle starting in April, it's the perfect time to be doing that. It'll be April 3rd. Oh, the dates are on the website. I don't have them right in front of me, but that's, I think it's the 3rd through the 6th or something like that. Anyway, and then also, just to let everybody know, those of you that have signed up for the Neptune class, it has been our elusive class, the one we've already rescheduled 3 times. And we're just waiting to reschedule it to find out if Daniel's going to have a good connection to have that class sometime in January. So stay tuned, and we will let you know as soon as we get that rescheduled. Mm-hmm. So with that,
I'm actually here remotely in the far outskirts of the boondocks of Manila, a place called Antipolo, the Philippines. So Kaylin and I are not in the same room for this call.
We're not even on the same continent.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think with that, we're ready to begin.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a variety of things we would like to discuss here, certainly on our list, and probably we should start with the most dynamic or the largest context that we can establish for the year. And that would be the Uranus-Pluto squares and the Grand Cross and the T-squares that are forming around that. So we'll discuss that. Then we'll also be discussing the 2 new synodic cycles that will be developing in the earlier part of 2014. We'll discuss that in some depth because I believe that that establishes also a much larger context to understand what's happening globally and culturally. And then there will be some additional things that we'll look at regarding the Jupiter trine Saturn and the Grand Trine in Water. We'll look a little bit at the eclipses. And then we'll go down to some of the less dramatic but still important things to know about 2014, some planetary ingresses, a look at the Mercury retrogrades during the year, and I think there's some other things on the list. But why don't we start from the probably the most important thing for us to know about 2014. And this is like the now reaching near the end of what has been the most important astrological configuration of the last few years. Actually, we could say it's from 2012 to 2015. And now in 2014, we have the 5th and 6th exact Uranus-Pluto squares. If you look back in history, and we've discussed this in previous years, previous calls. If you look back in history, the Uranian-Plutonian relationship, whether it's a conjunction, square, or opposition, is symbolic of massive amounts of cultural change, revolution, destructuring, transformation, just turmoil. Maximum Uranus and maximum Pluto in relationship with each other. But if we look back in history, the other times where this has been important, like most recently the early 1930s, the late 1960s, and we can go back to the French Revolution, I don't know whether I have seen another time where there are actually 7 exact squares, or exact conjunctions, or exact oppositions. And here we have seven of these. It's like seven drum beats of seven. Sometimes Uranus is going is direct and Pluto's retrograde. Sometimes Pluto is direct. Sometimes Uranus is retrograde. In 2014, we get the fifth and the sixth of these. The very last one, which completes the exact sequence of squares, is going to be in, I believe it's March of 2015. But there's going to be two in 2014. There will be one April 21st, and then there'll be another one December 15th. And there's a lot of other events that surround, particularly the one happening in April. We want to kind of lead you all up to this, like building events that are even some of the things that are building up to it are even happening now, with the Mars cycle coming into the slot. So just so we know what we're talking about as far as the zodiac, and this is going to be really important for those listening on an individual level, is that what I'm mentioning here about, which is the Uranus-Pluto square, on April 21st, it's the 13th degree of Aries-Capricorn. In other words, Uranus will be at around 13.5 Aries, and Pluto will be at about 13.5 Capricorn. The one that occurs in December is about 12.5 Aries, 12.5 Capricorn. So you can get a sense here that the individuals in 2014 who will be on the front lines, I sometimes use the evocative expression, in the crosswires of the Uranus square Pluto, are those, well, like 12, 13, 14 degrees of cardinal signs, of householder or culture bearer signs, Aries, Libra, Cancer, Capricorn. Not everyone will be, in that sense, on the front line. But those who have those degrees will certainly be going through initiatory processes. Then there is the aspect of it that is associated with the entire world, a global process of revolution, destructuring, transformation, change, of maximum Uranus standing off against maximum Pluto. And that's just the Uranus-Pluto part of it. If we look at seven of them, and then 2014 is the one that is that's the fifth and the sixth, you know, near the end of the sequence, then it would be fairly easy to look at 2014 as the year of the greatest amount of quote change or destructuring that can happen. And certainly the Grand Cross and the T square would certainly seem to add weight to that particular view. Maybe, Kaylin, you want to bring in as far as how the Jupiter story relates to this.
Yes, well, interestingly, it actually starts in January. I mean, we actually start this whole thing on the new moon, on January 1st, with a new moon around 12 Capricorn, with Pluto there, Mercury's around 13 Capricorn, and so Mars is at 12 Libra, Jupiter is at 8 Aries, almost 9, and Jupiter's at 16 Cancer retrograde. And so we're going to have our first taste of this dynamic aspect in a new moon as we hit the new year point. And then Jupiter will retrograde and back, and it will be at 13 degrees in January. It's also going to be in zodiacal alignment with a fixed star called Sirius. And that's something that can only happen every 12 years and might be something worth tuning into for people who like to go out under the sky and see bright Jupiter rising kind of beside in the same area or near the same area of the sky as Sirius. But these planets are Jupiter on the time of the Uranus-Pluto square in April actually on April 23rd, just 2 days after the exact square, and Jupiter will be at 13, Cancer at that time. Mars also will have retrograded back to 13 Cancer and 13 Libra, creating a grand cross between Pluto at 13 Capricorn, Uranus at 13 Aries, Jupiter at 13 Cancer, and Mars at 13 Libra, and then some minutes. So it's one of the most precise grand crosses. I don't know if I've ever seen one more precise than this. So Jupiter is kind of weaving in and out of this as it's going through its retrograde process and amplifying, magnifying, intensifying this whole process.
Mm-hmm. One thing I could interject is that for those that have been tracking this, this is the second. This would actually be the second point. It's part of a 7 or 8 month time frame where Jupiter has been creating a T square here.
Yes.
So we go back a few months to the previous Uranus Pluto square. That was the one that also had Jupiter in creating a T square at that point. So this is the second of two times that in the Jupiter cycle through Cancer, where it's gone past the degrees of 10, 11, 12, and moved up to 20, and now it's retrograding and it's going to be moving back to the 10th degree ultimately, but it's crossing the 13th degree in April, so that would be like the second time that Jupiter is part of this process.
Actually, and then it'll be the third time.
It's actually going to happen again.
Yeah, in January, Jupiter hits the 13th degree, and then it goes direct in March, and then it'll hit the 13th degree in April, and then it will.
Yes, all right, right.
Yeah.
Right, yes. A triple conjunction of the crosswires of this from the time period that when was the date last year of Uranus Pluto? I think it was in
November was it 1st when the one we had in November?
That's
the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Indeed. So Jupiter is. If we look back historically on the Uranus-Pluto processes, whether they are squares or whether they are oppositions or whether they're conjunctions, that is usually the presence of Jupiter either in conjunction or opposition or activating that configuration is what amps it up. It's what creates the. It's sort of like you're putting the complex. In this case, Uranus square Pluto on steroids. It's like maximizing the expansive strength that's possible within that, and kind of the culmination of the whole thing is in April, and then the added bonus of having Mars, which by January 1, in a few days from now, when begin the year, Mars will be at 11 Libra, and so it will actually be for many months, and we'll be talking about this. With the Mars synodic cycle, where Mars gets to be in Libra for about 8 months, the Mars cycle is also going to be in the crosswires of the Uranus-Pluto configuration, which is the grand cross scenario that Kaylin has been describing here.
And in addition to all of that, as if that weren't enough, we will have, in April, we'll be in the middle of the eclipse window when we have the Uranus-Pluto square and that exact grand cross taking place. So it's like, as if it's not already amped up enough and wild and intense enough, then, you throw in another wild card factor of an eclipse window. That's sort of a time that happens, twice a year. And to add to all of that, it's like, wow.
Yeah, the factor here that to keep in mind from the shamanic astrology paradigm is that Uranus could be thought of as the most intensely activating planet of the celestial realm, the upper world, Pluto being the most intensely activating planet of the underworld or lower world, and then Mars and Jupiter would be certainly in this portion of the Mars cycle and the way we understand Jupiter, are part of the middle world. So we actually have this grand cross that has very activating, strengthened, action-oriented planets, movement-oriented planets like Jupiter and Mars in configuration with the most activating planet of the celestial and the most activating planet of the underworld, all in this cross. And that actually then brings up the issue was, so what in the world is a grand cross? You know, like what is the intent of such a configuration? There's a remarkable variety of views about this. Some people in the more traditional, with the most more traditional approach to it, would consider it to be the most difficult of all the configurations anyone could have. It's like being right in the middle, and then there's four forces hitting you simultaneously from the four different directions, and you're kind of like boxed. You're like in the center of a box. Sometimes it's been referred to as make it or break it. I've certainly have seen the charts over the years of individuals who are alleged to be enlightened, like people like Ramana Maharshi and Sri Aurobindo and people like that, and their charts are dominated by the grand cross phenomena. So you could just say that maybe out of divine discontent, they made it through all the way to the other side. And at the same time, we cannot, sugarcoat the fact that we're not trying to, like, you know, Pollyanna or make, be light polarized about a grand cross. You know, it does force us to take seriously what's taking place, and a breaking point can be reached. I think the design of it is to have all of those different planetary energies balanced, strengthening each other, and not like being a balloon apart. In some ways, having Jupiter and Mars in that configuration actually can be very stabilizing if we want to look at it as a more holistic or a more positive light.
If we think about Uranus's job as being to break down the old structures, the old, so that we can break through to something new, to an evolutionary process, and that, you know, that feels like that's part of what this is about, the breakdown to reach a breakthrough.
Right.
Ultimately, but it's also created through this dynamic tension of the Grand Cross, and so every point is illuminated, activated, and has a job to do. But sometimes there can feel maybe like they're at cross purposes with other points of the cross, so it's creating the challenge that somehow.
Yeah, and actually, it's really only the time period when Mars is moved into the position to create a grand cross, where it might be possible for this sense of there being a structural balance between all the elements. That when Mars is not involved, then the Jupiter configuration is called a T-square, and the T-square is in some respects more of an unstable configuration. I mean, that's where, like, Jupiter is really trying to somehow move the instability of the maximum Uranus and maximum Pluto into different directions. And that's very unpredictable, as it was unbelievably unpredictable in the time period of 1968 when Jupiter, Uranus, and Pluto were conjunct. And different time periods in 1932, 1933, and during the French Revolution. During the French Revolution, Saturn was involved also. But anyway, pretty much anything can happen. And I would be the last person, and we haven't been doing this in shamanic astrology for a long time, I mean, if we ever have, I'd be the last person to try to, quote, predict what in the world is going to actually transpire. It really could be anything. And about the best possible way that we can even approach the subject is to look at it from the perspective of intent. And if you have the intent of Uranus, maximum Uranus, and in Aries of all things, you know, which is the most revolutionary placement of Uranus historically, if you have Uranus in Aries and then you have Pluto in Capricorn, you certainly can see the intent is revolution, and the intent is to break down the previous structures that are not actually serving the planet, which is part of our whole story that we've been developing for the last couple of years about Capricorn, about this revisioning of Capricorn. And Pluto moving through Capricorn is really the symbol of that whole revisioning, the breaking down of the old Capricorn, the time period when Capricorn has been usurped by the patriarchy. And just to give you a very simple example of what I'm talking about, in our reformulation of Capricorn, Capricorn is intended to serve the needs of the many generations to follow, and it's oriented toward the needs of the Earth herself and the people on the planet in a sustainable way that makes it work, like growing corn, like growing rice or whatever for the future generation. And what happens is that if you have a Capricorn also symbolizing corporate structure, corporations, finance, big business, and so on, it's really clear that Capricorn is at the end of the line. It needs a complete transformation, because if you are only concerned about quarterly profits, you're actually abdicating the responsibility of Capricorn, which is to attend to the needs of the people and to be concerned about the planet herself. It's actually an elder, matriarchal, feminine energy. So Pluto grinding that down one way or another, and then Uranus, the force of revolution, change. And then Jupiter in Cancer, which just basically describes what the motive of the whole process is. And it's really kind of reminds me of the ideals of Buckminster Fuller, a triple Cancer. You know, if it's got the planet has to, can be made to work for everyone. And if the planet is not being made to work for everyone, well, then what's the point of the human race? I mean, really, I mean, if it can't work for everyone, then we, as he put it, the human beings have failed their final examination. So this is kind of like a final examination about whether we can make it work for everyone. And I think that's the message of Jupiter and Cancer. So we find this phenomena of Jupiter, and as Kaylin was pointing out, it's like three separate times and in the first 4 months of 2014 is going to be dominated by the Jupiter effect with the grant with the Uranus Pluto square. Kaylin?
Yes, and Mars is also right there as we begin the year, and will be getting ready to go retrograde and continue to be a part of this. So Mars in Libra actually is in Libra until July. It went into Libra last month and is there for quite a long time. So it's you know, this whole aspect of all four points of the cross being active, we're already in it, and we'll be in it. As the moon comes along four times a month to activate different points of the cross, and then, you know, we begin a whole new Mars cycle, 26-month Mars cycle during this time, and also Venus in Capricorn as we start 2014 and retrograde, and we'll be coming into the range of the Grand Cross, and she begins her new cycle, rises as the morning star, on January 17th, and you know, so she's activating the in the first month. I mean, we're just like off and running, you know.
Yeah, so maybe let me at this point begin our interjecting about the synodic cycle shift. So first up is the new Venus cycle. And I'm only going to just in general touch on this and just give the dates and not go into all the details on it except the meaning of the archetypal contribution that's happening here. We actually just finished doing a whole talent class on the Venus synodic cycle. And for those who are interested in getting all the details, I want to refer you to that. But what's happening is about every 584 days, Venus will rise as morning star. And it takes five of these to come back to approximately the same points. Right now, The next synodic cycle is rising. Venus will be rising as morning star in the sign of Capricorn, and that will be on January 17th. Right now, Venus is retrograde and is diving past toward the horizon, and will go in between the orbit of the sun and Earth, and then rises morning star January 17th, beginning a new journey. And it's Venus Inanna's journey to the underworld. But if we look at the entire cycle, it is this way of developing greater strength, greater understanding, a new journey of the Capricorn archetype of the feminine principle on the world stage. The last cycle that we've been in, which is just winding down now, has been Gemini goddess. And now it is going to be the Capricorn goddess. Well, I just finished mentioning about the purpose of Pluto in Capricorn. So now here we have the goddess herself for the next 584 days after January 17th on the world stage investigating Capricorn. So this is the return of the element of the aspect of the feminine we're referring to here. The elder aspect, the circle of grandmothers, the matrilineal, matriarchal wisdom keepers, the ones who make the decisions for the benefit of the many generations to follow, sustainability, care for the earth, and whether or not the decisions we make as a people are really practically attending to the needs of the earth and her people. It seems to me that when this particular goddess enters the underworld, and her underworld cycle will happen this year, it will happen from the 16th of September 2014 until the 4th of December 2014. So we have the fall. I mean, we have basically from, in the time period from just before autumnal equinox until just before winter solstice, we have a time period where Venus, Capricorn goddess, will be in the underworld. Well, what do you suppose she's likely to be grieving as part of her journey? Certainly she will be grieving the way in which human beings have been cut off from caring about the earth and caring about sustainability and things like that. Hopefully by the time she rises as morning star, there will be such a shift on the planet that she has something to celebrate, that it will not just be her grieving of our separation from our Earth Mother. So that Venus cycle is going to dominate up the whole time period of what we've been referring to as these first 4 months of the year, which is all this Uranus, Pluto, Jupiter, Mars material that we've been looking at. Did you wish to, Kaylin, since we're at remotely, it's like I'm
I know.
Thing, and I got to stop and let you interject here. Sorry.
Oh, no, I think that's really great. And I just want to remind everybody that we did do a 90-minute class on Venus cycle. And it has a handout with all the dates of where Venus is going to be in the different parts of her cycle and so on. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, you can go to the website and sign up and get that class. And it's definitely worth paying attention to, regardless of whether you're in a Venus return or not. It feels like this Venus cycle is so incredibly important because it is the Capricorn overtone, because the Grand Cross is featuring Pluto in Capricorn. That this particular, it's like how the wisdom of the universe, the brilliance of the lineup of how these cycles are coming together just is astounding. And really, Venus cycle is so easy to stay connected to and to see the Venus-Moon conjunctions and to be with the different parts of the Venus cycle. So I highly recommend that people check that out.
And it will be actually in February that the actual zodiacal placement of Venus right after she has risen from the underworld as morning star, that will be in the crosswires of the Uranus-Pluto square at that time.
Well, she's actually going to be in January and then again in February because she's going retrograde. She goes retrograde until January 31st, I think, or February 1st. She goes direct, and then she'll come back in again. So she's actually.
Oh, yeah. I'm just noticing. Yeah, because actually it will be in January, the retrograde. In fact, the conjunction with the moon on the 28th of January is at 13 Capricorn.
Yes.
And the stationary direct of Venus is at 13 Capricorn.
And that's what the degrees of the Grand Cross are.
Mm-hmm. 13 Capricorn, right.
And
so Venus is a real major player there. And then Mars will be a major player several times here. But in particular, in April, Mars forms that exact Grand Cross at the 13th degree.
Exactly.
By the way, Kaylin was noting this 13th degree is particularly interesting in that at this time period in history, if you draw lines of longitude from a star that's not actually on the ecliptic, but relatively close to the ecliptic, Sirius, that at this time period in history, it's at 13 Cancer. So that the fact that the Grand Cross and including Jupiter right exactly on 13 Cancer seems to be directing our attention to Sirius in some way. That was one of the main features, by the way, Kaylin, on our trip to South Africa, since the people involved with the White Lion mythos, their view is that Sirius is, you know, in all of Africa, the Zeptepi Meridian is so much connected into the idea that we're from Sirius in some way.
Right.
The two homeland stars for the lions and for the African people and from who we are maybe collectively as a human race seems to be sourced either on the central star of the belt of Orion, that's where they say the lions are from, and then Sirius, which is in some ways where we're from.
And the whole Egyptian culture and the other cultures too, of course, but we do know for sure that the Egyptian culture, they started their new year with the heliacal rise of Sirius because that began the flooding of the Nile and their whole culture was built around that particular star. So it was super important to them. And so it's really important for us to also pay attention and tune in and see what is it contributing to all of this at this time.
So now let's weave in the new Mars synodic cycle. The fact that there's two new ones happening within a few months of each other is a very significant feature of the year 2014. So it turns out that the Mars synodic cycle lasts about 26 months, and we're going to be beginning a new one in April. And it will be featuring the sign Libra. By the way, in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, after working with this now for almost 20 years, our assessment is that the cycle actually begins at the point where Mars is rising in the east as like a rising of a full moon when it opposite the sun. So as the sun is setting, Mars, very bright, rises in the east as the sun is setting in the west. And it's the time period of the cycle of Mars where it stays in the same sign for 7, 8, 9 months as if centered in that particular area of the sky, that particular constellation, that particular sign for a very long period of time. And so we have then the version of the masculine in both men and women. The emphasis will be the god Libra, or the archetype Libra. It's been a while since this has been the main character on the world stage for the masculine. So what could this be about? I personally feel that of all the different expressions of the masculine, it is the Libra version that has been the one that has been most... not understood or not valued or not empowered. I love it when I'm thinking of the masculine. I always love Jung's definition of masculinity. Jung said, masculinity means to know your sword and to know how to use it. Now, if we take away the martial imagery, and let's just use only the sort of the tantric or phallic imagery of it, the 12 different versions of Mars could be thought of as the 12 different ways in which the masculine can be turned on or feel good about itself or feel strong or feel empowered. So what would Mars in Libra be? It's really the capacity to work on a relationship, to work on collaboration, to work on the conscious equal partnership projects that can exist at this point. It's certainly not some sort of independent warrior alpha male. It's actually the male who considers working on the relationship, maybe even working on the relationship more than the woman does, that is the source of strength for that man. And this is a very different thing than the codependency that is usually projected onto Libra. We're the type of guy that's lost unless there's a woman on his arm, or the kind of guy that has more of his energy across the table with someone else than with himself. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about a primacy toward actually looking at a relationship as something to put your attention on and to work on and to be strong about and to care about. And I think that's the one that will be on the front lines here. But also, if we're not looking at relationship, we're looking at peacemaking, collaboration in that sense, being able to see the reality of other people and to work around a round table and to be in collaboration, communication, and partnership, not out of competition, but out of collaboration. So, I mean, to me, this is an important feature of what will be required as we go into these next years. So that's a very different feature of masculinity than the ones that have been on the front lines the last 4 or 5 years. The last couple of years had been the god Virgo. Prior to that, we've seen it move through the Taurian god. We've seen it move through other ones that are not the more mainstream ones. But now it's in Libra, together with, we could say, doing a dance that will be seen together in the skies by 2015, which is with the god Capricorn. So, goddess Capricorn. So, anyway, that's my take on this part of it, which is the Mars cycle as it interrelates with the Venus cycle, and in particular is activating the square between Uranus and Pluto and creating that grand cross in April.
So just something for everybody to know is we will be doing a more extensive teleclass on the Mars cycle that people can be able to sign up for and be a part of. And the other thing that's really interesting about this is that because the nodal axis is shifting, and in February the North Node is moving into Libra, so that means Mars and the North Node are going to be kind of hanging out together in Libra. And then the other thing about this Mars cycle that's very fascinating is that it will be passing the fixed star Spica 3 times, Spica being the strongest symbol of the divine feminine, star that represents the divine feminine in the sky in the constellation of the Virgin Priestess. And that's also one of the Bohemian stars, the magical stars that the alchemists did their ceremonies, yes, and made their talismans and all that. And Mars will actually be with that star for, it catches up in January, and it's there until like July when it finally moves on into Scorpio, when Mars finally moves into Scorpio is when it will finally move past the degrees of the Bohemian, activation of Spica. So much rich material.
Yeah, and I could interject here, just as we were saying that individuals that have important placements around 12, 13 degrees of so-called cardinal signs, well, now we're seeing a great emphasis for people who happen to have late Libra placements, because we have the movement of the North Node, as you were indicating, into Libra-Aries axis, which happens on February 18th. That's the ingress of the nodal axis, which will move into a different signs about every year and a half. And then since Mars is going to be in Libra for a long time, including the latter degrees around Spica,